This is our last week of intellectual property, the last week of this month. So I want to discuss the question of, kind of as a summary, a capstone to what we've been learning, both with regard to intellectual property as well as Chosh Mishpat in general, the idea of Lefim Mishur Sadin, the idea of Yosher and, you know, rationality, things which Seichel is Mechayev. This plays a role all over Chosh Mishpat, going beyond what the letter of the law says to things that make sense and seem right, even if you can't find a specific, concrete source in halacha. This is a topic that particularly fascinates me. It's an interesting and difficult topic. So I want to just begin with a few Maor Mekomos, what Poskim have said specifically on the topic of intellectual property and how that's impacted by our sense of Yosher, and then move from that to a broader discussion of Lefim Mishuras Hadin and Yosher in Chosh Mishpat in general. So some of these sources we've seen already. The Hesar Rish Tshuva was asked about the right of an author to control the publication, to profit from a sefer he had published. And he argues that Mikra Din, it's not so clear, certainly with regard to the heirs, that they have any rights. He wasn't sure that intellectual property in halacha is a real thing, at least not the sort of thing that passes over Beirusha. But he argues that it certainly is something that Yosher dictates to us, he says. He says, certainly when it comes to intellectual property, Hasechel Yosher tells us, he says, that I worked on it, I toiled on it, I should benefit, my heir should benefit, he says. And therefore, he says, if the law recognizes it, secular law, putting those two things together, we recognize it's Yosher, even though we don't have an actual halacha that finalizes it, that concretizes it. They actually have a law. Those two combine to create a chiyah for us too. If it was just Din Malchusa, but not something that we felt was particularly Yosher, we wouldn't follow it against her. If it was just our sense of Yosher without a law, it would be a nice thing to do, but it wouldn't be actually mandatory. Those two things combine, if our Yosher undergirds the law, then it becomes binding as Din Malchusa upon us too. The basic idea that we can use the law to shed light on what is Yosher and not is also made in the famous Sholem Eshiv that we began with. That's one of the most famous Maor Mekomos on the topic of intellectual property, that he says, since they have such a law, lo tehei Torah shlema shelanu kesicha b'teila shelahem, if they recognize it, he doesn't even say you need to Malchusa. He just says that somehow the Yosher itself, in this case at least, creates a halacha, that if they recognize it as lawful and logical, we should too. Rav Yehuda Silman, a veteran dying in Bnei Brak, does not like this. In his sefer, Darchei Choshen, he dismisses the Sholem Eshiv. He says that their laws are built on svaras, what they think is Yosher, he says, and halacha is based on lamdas, on bailas, on zechuyas, he says. He says, in order to be kofen and halacha, you need bailas. It's not enough to have what seems to you to be Yosher. Not sure how to unpack that exactly. It seems that he is granting that it's Yosher, just not that it becomes din. As we'll see in, throughout this week, it's far from clear that you cannot, whether the question of whether you can be kofa, whether Basin can compel somebody to act with Mishur Zadin, is actually a matter of considerable debate. And there are poskim who say that Basin can compel somebody to do that which is considered Yosher, Lefim Mishur Zadin, even if it's not a halacha. But Rav Silman seems to be willing, at least possibly for the sake of argument, to conclude that we can infer Yosher from them, but he feels that you can't create halacha based on that. And again, all these three comments all are revolving around the central theme, which is, if something is Yosher, if we infer something is Yosher from the law, from the general consensus, the good opinions of mankind, we conclude that something is Yosher, what is the impact of that on halacha? Does that justify the law? Does that become a halacha in and of itself? Does that mean it's the right thing to do? Will Basin tell me to do that? Will Basin force me to do that? These are all different ways of expressing the basic question that we're doing this week. What is the status of Lefim Mishuras Hadin, of Asisa Yosher v'Hayosher v'Atov, in halacha? So as we'll see, as some of you may have seen, there are two main gemaras in Bava Metzia which are very widely quoted on this topic. One of them is in the Sugya of Hashavas Aveda. It concerns, the exact details are not important to us right now, but it concerns someone who found an Aveda in situations where there has been Yeish. The halacha is, if you find an Aveda after Yeish, you can keep it. There's no simon, or it's a place where most of the people around are non-Jews, so the person who lost it has no expectation of getting it back. Zuto shel yam, it was washed away in a tidal wave, so you don't expect to see it. All these cases where you have various sorts of yeish or other reasons why the halacha says you're allowed to keep the aveda, the Gemara nevertheless says, and this is how we paskin, Delafin Mishur Sadin, you should still return it, provided you know whose it is. In certain cases, you just don't know who it is. You find cash and there's no simon, you're not going to be able to return it because there's no simon. Forget Yeish. But if you know who it is, and someone tells you and you believe him that it's his, if you can satisfy the question of who the owner is, Alpi Din, maybe you can still keep it, but as long as it's Yeish. But Delafin Mishur Sadin, you should return it. And that's how we pass it in Shulchan Aruch. The other Gemara, one of my favorite stories in the Gemara, is a Gemara in the laws of Poalim, Shomrim Poalim. The case was someone had been, workers had been carrying barrels, schlepping barrels of wine on behalf of one of the Amoraim, Rabba Bar Rav Chanan or Chana or Huna, but they had been carrying his barrels. They broke the barrels in a way that was negligent. Different cases exactly how that would be, but again, for our purposes, it's sufficient to understand that they broke the barrels in such a way that they would be chayev because it was their fault. So the owner of the barrels seized their clothing as collateral, as payment. He said, you owe me the money for the barrels, I'm taking your coat. They went to a dintara, they went to Rav, and Rav said, give them back. Give the coats back to the workers. He was rather surprised. He knew the halacha was not like that. He said, dina hachi, is that really the din? So he told him, yes. Why? He said, in, which means yes. And he said, why? That one word is going to be much debated by the Achronim. He said, why? Because the Pasuk in Mishlei says, Leman telech b'derech tovim, for thou shalt walk in the paths of the good. So the workers were happy they got the coats back, but they still weren't getting paid. So they pleaded poignantly. They said, we're hungry. We worked all day. We were anticipating our wages to buy supper. But now we have no food, and then we're hungry, and what should we do? Rav told the boss, pay them for their work. They broke your barrels, it was their fault, nevertheless, pay them for the work. So again, he asked, Dina Hachi, is that the din? So he told him again, in, he said, yes, it is the din, and he told him, V'archa Sadikim Tishmar, and thou shalt heed the ways of the righteous. Also Pasuk in Mishlei, the end of the same Pasuk. So, discuss later, there's a great deal of debate in the Achronim about what exactly this Gemara means. He asked him, Dina Hachi. He said, yes, it is the din. Is it the din? Is it not the din? Is it the Mishur Sadin? But anyway, he told him yes. And the most practical question debated by the Rishonim and Achronim in both these Gemaras is, can we be kofed, the question we alluded to before, can Basin compel somebody to act Lefnim Mishur Sadin? This is a major debate, Rishonim and Achronim. Rishonim seem to debate this. Some Rishonim say, yes, we're kofed Lefnim Mishur Sadin. Other Rishonim say, no, we are not kofed Lefnim Mishur Sadin. Certainly sounds like a machlokas. And the Achronim debate this too. Some Achronim claim there's no machlokas. Some Achronim claim the Rishonim all agree. There are at least two ways to reconcile the conflicting statements in the Rishonim. One way is that the Rishonim who say chayev stipulate when the person has the means, when he has the resources to do this extra credit, so to speak, with him Ashur Sadin. Then we force him to do it. If he's rich, or they add if he's rich and the other one is poor, and certainly, if the person who found the $10 bill is a rich man who doesn't need the money that much, the person who lost it is a poor man, that's a big hit for him, then not only is it the right thing to do, basically will actually compel him to do it. But in a case where the person who found it is a poor man who can really use $10, the person who lost it has plenty more where that came from, then we will not be kofa for him to do it at all. That is one way of reconciling them. Another way of reconciling the Rishonim is, some Achronim say, there are different levels of kfiya. There are at least three or four different levels we can talk about. There's from least to greatest, we have moral suasion. We can tell him, you really should do this, you must do this, it's the right thing to do. Just words. The next step up could be chayrim. We put the guy in chayrim unless he does it. Another step up, there's actually some debate, which is worse, physical compulsion or chayrim, but in this context, the Achronim are assuming that the third step up beyond mere words, chayrim, would be physical compulsion. We could beat somebody, just like a person's supposed to do a mitzvah, he's supposed to take lulav, put on tefillin, he doesn't do it. We could force him to do it. We can force people to do mitzvah, so we'll force people to do the right thing, which is the Lefnim Mishur Sadin. And the highest level, the level of most chiyuv, which would be we can actually take away his property. We can actually seize property, which is the right of the court in a civil case, to seize property to make somebody satisfy his chiyuv. So some Achronim want to argue that the Rishonim would say kofa mean only one of the lower levels. Some say only, literally only words, nothing more than words. We can call him an avarian even, we can use very strong words, but nothing more than words. Other Achronim say we can do maybe words plus chayrim. Some Achronim say we can even do kfiya, we can even beat the person, but we can't actually seize his property because in din, There's no actual claim. So wherever you draw the line, this is another approach to the Rishonim, that there are different levels of kfiya, and that some levels of kfiya are legitimate, others are not. Other Acharim say it's machlokes Rishonim, and that some Rishonim say yes, and some say no. The Ramah seems to hold like that. The Ramah actually brings, in I think a couple of places in Shulchan Aruch, there are two opinions. Yesh Omrim, we can be kofa. Yesh Omrim, that we're not kofa. And again, the Acharim disagree what the real, how we paskin, which shita is ikar. The consensus, I think, or the kind of the middle position seems to be that we would be kofa with word, but we would probably not be kofa much beyond words. This comes up in all kinds of different tshuvas, some of which we'll discuss tonight and later in the week, some we won't get to. All kinds of different cases where the post can feel something is really right, but not actually a halacha. For example, severance pay and pensions. I gave a chabur a second seder once about this, where if you dismiss a worker after years of service and there's nothing in the contract or in the law that's mechayev a pension, that's mechayev any kind of severance, but the post can generally feel it's the right thing to do. The guy worked for you, he helped you build your business. You're not formally partners, but you know he helped you for years. You just throw him out in his old age with nothing seems kind of cruel. And many posts can say that this Lefim Meshuras HaDin, and maybe we could even be kofa, at least with words, maybe even more than that, but L'chol HaPachas with words, we could be kofa. That's probably the middle view, that's probably the consensus of the Achronim. And again, the debate partly has to do with how to understand the Gemara in Bava Metzia, the latter Gemara about the barrels. When he told him, Dina Hachi, and he said in, some Achronim like the Bach say that in implies that he was actually Paskin Yichayev, and the implication was he was actually going to be kofa, at least with some level of kfiya. Other Achronim say no. It means he told him yes. I'm an advisory opinion. I'm a Talmud Chacham. I'm telling you the halacha is yes. You're chayev. Beyond that, I'm not going to go. But there was no real kfiya in any sense. The Bach uses very strong language. He says the minhag in kol batei din in Yisrael. He says it's to force at least rich people. He emphasizes to force them to do what they can easily afford, what they can afford. And even the Rosh, he says, those who say there's no kfiya mean if he's not rich. And again, pukhazi mayam adabar. The minhag is to be kofa. So if the minhag is to be kofa, then if you're kofa, then obviously what we have to explain is what exactly is the difference now between din and lefim meshuras hadin. What makes them different? In both cases, Beis Din will force you to do it. So if the level of kfiya is less, then that could be the difference right there. That's what the Rama Tum says. We're not really kofa. We're only kofa bedvarim. That's what makes din lefim meshuras hadin two different categories. Din has real kfiya. Lefim meshuras hadin doesn't. But other poskim, some Rishonim, some Achronim, seem to say that even for Lefim Meshuras HaDin, we are actually kofa, and we're kofa fully even. So what exactly is the difference then between Din and Lefim Meshuras HaDin? This is an idea of Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, which I have an extensive citation of him later in the week. You'll read it inside, it's worth reading. But he basically explains that conceptually, Din are the broad rules without exceptions that just apply rigidly and across the board, that's din. Situational ethics, so to speak, situational halacha that depends on certain facets of the case, that depends on circumstances, that's what we call a lefim meshuras din. Now, it might be just as binding. Some person could be just as binding, but din are the rules that apply sweepingly, broadly across the board, and lefim meshuras din are the rules that apply, we take into account more of the details. Now, obviously, the definition has to be a little sharper than that. All of Chosh and Mishpat, all the technical things we learn, take into account numerous details of the case and pratim and prate pratim. So even real din certainly does. But these kinds of extraneous factors, are you rich? Are you poor? Is he rich? Is he poor? The Torah says, v'dolo sad dabariva, when it comes to real din, we don't look at the financial resources of both sides. We paskin din. Lefim meshuras hadin is another track of halacha where we do take into account both. That's one thing we take into account, the level of financial resources of the litigants. The other major axis, the other major factor that the post can take into account is the spiritual stature of the Balei Din. When Rabbi Bar Chana said, Dina Hachi, and he told him yes, because it says, L'man Telech B'derech Tovim, Baruch HaSadikim Tishmar, as we'll see, some Achronim understand what he was telling him was an ordinary person might not be mechuyev. You're right, it's not din. That's why you think it's not din, because you learned in yeshiva, you know that's not the din. But for you, someone on your madrega, someone who in general is pious and wants to do Ratzon Hashem, for such a person, it's actually din. For such a person, we're actually going to be kofa. That's how a number of Achronim learn. That's the other thing that din, that Lefim Meshuras HaDin takes into account, again, these kind of extra judicial factors, extra legal factors beyond simply the basic Shulchan Aruch of who's right and who's wrong takes into account, A, the financial resources of the two sides, both objectively and apparently, and the relative resources, and B, takes into account the spiritual stature of the two litigants.